the Big 7-0 of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we revisit great movies today, especially from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name is Kalen Egan.
My name is Travis Santel.
Electric Boo Galoo.
The most famous example of a joke sequel when someone says, oh, Point Break 2, Electric Boogaloo. you guys have
that
heard that
funny.
Joke.
Wait, do another one.
Jurassic Park 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, that was even better.
This is my least favorite repetitive joke that you hear comedians make on podcasts.
Yeah.
You heard
comedians.
It.
That's an unfair word. No comedian has made that joke in 10 years.
I disagree. Doug loves movies. I've heard it at least 7 times that joke made. I'm not joking.
That's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
You're not joking?
I'm not joking about that joke.
So what do we know about this movie?
I've seen it, first of all.
You have.
Ages ago, I was pretty obsessed with Breakin' as a concept and got really into Rerun from What's Happening Now, who
right.
was a great, you know, breaker. And he's doing Popping and Locking and all that stuff back
sure,
in the day.
Sure.
And then I went and bought Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo because of him. So I saw him do his thing and I was like, what is this situation?
Had you seen Breakin'?
No, I saw Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo before I saw Breakin'.
Oh.
And then I later saw Breakin'. But I saw this in college.
Well, all I know about this movie, I have never seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Breakin' and I've never seen Breakin' 2.
Did you ever breakdance?
Oh, yeah. Well, for a few years there, I was really good.
Can I see a head spin? All right, here you go. Ho, ho, ho! Oh, I did not think you'd be able to pull that off.
Well, I mean, I'm getting older. But you know, you get the idea of what I could do.
No, that was a threer.
I did watch that documentary about Canon Films where they talked a lot about Breakin' and Breakin' 2. And it's a very interesting story, you know, that they made Breakin' essentially to capitalize on a breakdance trend. That was a big hit, and then they went like cartoon crazy for Breakin' 2. Like they really turned it way up and lost any sense of
the
realism.
Real community. Yeah,
and just went ballistic. And so I expect this movie to be very fun. I guess.
Don't you think?
Maybe insensitive, maybe offensive. Like I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think that Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, is more famous of a film than Breakin'?
Yeah, but what is it when a movie is famous for its title? Because
yeah.
I feel like that's what it is.
Yeah, you're probably right. Electric Boogaloo is probably the active funny ingredient there.
Yeah, I mean, how many more people have said the title than have seen the film?
Oh, everyone. Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, no, it's
like 99%.
That's probably the title. You're right.
So, I intend, as we always do, to treat this with fairness, to analyze it as a film first and a title second.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I really liked... I don't suggest that Electric Boogaloo is indicative or representative
of an
actual...
Do you say Boogaloo?
I say Boogaloo. You say Boogaloo?
You say Boogaloo?
Yeah. Do you say Boogaloo?
Of course!
I say Boogaloo.
Say the whole thing.
Electric Boogaloo.
You're faking it.
Now
you don't really say
now,
that.
Now I don't know, if I'm being honest.
We need to go back and listen, because you do not say break into Electric Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo.
Now I'm leaning into it. Break into Electric Boogaloo. Boogaloo.
Yes.
Boogaloo. You know what it is? I think if I say, you know how you say, if you say the Caribbean, but if you say Pirates of the Caribbean,
yes.
you pronounce it differently in context
right.
of the name.
So
I suggest,
in normal life, when you just have to say
Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
Yeah. But if you say break into
Can
Electric
I say,
Boogaloo.
Not to carry on a trend. Boogaloo sounds racist to me.
What?
I don't know.
Wait.
It sounds gross and weird to me, where Boogaloo sounds like a good time.
No.
Are
Boogaloo.
Are those racist terms?
God,
is it a racist
it.
Word?
I don't want to do this on 2 episodes. I will say. And
that's
I,
my
I,
new character.
I,
Everything
God,
you say, I
racist.
Say, I think that's coded racism.
Yeah.
Everything
well, you're
going
to really
say.
Burn that out. And that feels racist to me, that you keep trying to call everything racist.
Reverse racism?
Ugh,
that's
too much.
That's coded
I
racism.
I do think, just to close that loop, I do honestly in my heart think if I
just
said
to close
Boogaloo,
that loop.
That loop. I would say Boogaloo, but if I said Breakin' 2, I bet I'd say Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
So I think it's context dependent.
Okay. Okay.
Is that interesting, listeners?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yes. You were asking me. Yes.
I also got a lot of feedback about how I said mirror, and that sucks.
Well, and you said, how do you say pillow?
Pillow.
Didn't you say like
pillow?
Pillow.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you say weird words weird.
Yeah, I do. I'm from the South.
What are
That's
do?
What happens, man. So it's going to be a great film. It's going to be fun. I look forward. Hopefully we can watch this one together.
I think it's a good idea.
Because it's going to be a good psychedelic trip. I also will say, in terms of nostalgia, not just the movement of this dance craze, which really fizzled out. I mean, you see Breaking Battle still. This is a different type of breakdancing. It's like, what they do now is way different.
You would
know
this. You're the kind of person who would know this. What the fuck is breakdancing? Like, I mean, I know what it is, but like, why is it that?
Well, it was part of the hip-hop movement. So you had hip-hop, DJing and breaking, and you had a bunch of components to sort of hip-hop.
Right, and it came out of, like, New York, like, yeah, the same sort of scene, and it's street corner stuff on cardboard boxes, that's why.
I do not want to speak as an authority on this.
I just thought you would know.
If you told me right now, I could get away with a lot right now.
If you did what I did, and you were like, I really did this. If you looked at me real sincere, yeah, and were like, no, I spent, like, 4 years learning how to breakdance. I won a breakdance competition just out of college,
yeah,
in Scotland. I'd be like, fuck, of course.
I did win a dance competition where I did do some breaking moves. That's a fact. Right out of college. That's true.
What?
That's true. But I was not a break dancer. What moves did you do?
What were they called?
Oh, I don't remember. I couldn't do a windmill. I couldn't do any of that shit. I wasn't that good.
I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I mean, is that where it, like, where you wave your arm around?
No. Let's not let this podcast evolve into us trying to figure out what breakdancing is.
That's a good idea, but
I will say it was a strong cultural movement that was part of the entire hip hop scene. And it came out of a very real place, and it was a cultural trend that had sort of very real roots. It's still around. Breakdancing is for sure still around. It's a different thing. It's more muscular. It's more acrobatic. There's a lot more stuff going on. Dance battles still happen, all that stuff. But this was, I assume, I don't remember breaking that well, but I assume it was a look into this community that was, like, doing cool shit and expressing themselves in a really new, a very, very new fucking way.
Well, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I do love dance movies.
Same.
A good dance movie is a good movie.
Yeah.
And, like, I've seen 3 of the 4 Step Ups.
I've seen them all.
You saw Step Up 4?
Yeah. I love them.
Loved them.
I love them.
Step Up 2 and Step Up 3 are fantastic.
Well, Step Up 2, The Street, Step Up 3D.
Yeah.
Just be clear.
Yeah, yeah. And I love Magic Mike 1 and 2, as has been covered on this podcast. Those. Hard to call those dance movies, but Magic Mike XXL has a lot of dancing, and it's pretty fucking awesome. I like You Got Served. Like, there was a beautiful run there in the early 2000s or mid 2000s.
People
like
those films.
Yeah, what the fuck happened? Where are they? Do they still make cool dance movies? Like, they should.
Yeah, they should. I worry that Electric Boogaloo is gonna be more plot heavy and less dance movie.
Oh, really?
Less dance heavy.
I was gonna guess it would be more dance heavy, but it'd be bullshit dancing.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean,
like, fake bullshit dancing. Because what I remember from that documentary is that it's like, now they're breakdancing on the ceiling. Yeah. Like, it's just like, oh no.
I did hang out with dancers for a long time, and this movie was said with sort of mild disdain, but also a sort of, like, fun appreciation. Like,
so they did, they watched it, they had opinions about
for
it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this movie came up a lot. Breaking came up again. I'm this is a long way away from my memory here, but I do remember Breaking was always referenced by, like, real dancers. Like, Breaking was cool, super cool, and there was always like a wink and a nod to Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo,
right?
But not, like, in a way that was dismissive. It was like, yeah, that's sticky, fun, weird thing,
right?
So that's my expectation of it. I think there's gonna be a shit ton of 80s nostalgia in this film, a shit ton of, like, stylistic choices that are 80s films, like vamped up crazy shit, probably a lot of neon-y colors and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Crazy outfits. I mean, I'm into all
that. I'm very into that. I mean, again, this is from an era that I do not actually have nostalgia for, so I feel like a little bit...
I think I have a lot of it.
Okay, great.
I really think, like, this is the musical movement that this kind of rests on, maybe not Breaking 2, but that the genre of sort of early hip-hop... and the stuff that was built for dancers in a lot of ways, I have a lot of affinity and affection for. So I expect to have, like, a really fun time in this movie.
Okay, let me ask you so are you assuming that it's not going to be a good movie?
I am assuming it's not going to be a good movie.
But you assume you're going to have a great time.
I'm assuming I'll have a good time for a lot of the film.
Are we potentially, I'm not going to predict, but are we potentially going to be confronting another dimension of defining the word suck? If this movie is as entertaining as I hope it is, but as bad or even potentially offensive to a certain kind of culture or a time in history, are we maybe going to have that conversation?
We can have it. I think we can lean into it if we'd like to. I think that it has value because of its name. which has which has lasted.
That's true.
And I think that it has value because of its. This may be an interesting thing to talk about. Is the taking a what I think Breakin' is a looking at an actual trend and, you know, with some degree of like interest and talent, looking at an actual musical and dance trend that was happening in the States, and then
exploiting it. Yes.
That's the thing I think that may be interesting to talk about. Is that I don't know of another. This may be one of the first examples of someone shamelessly cash grabbing an idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could talk a little bit more on the back half about Golden Globus, you know, the guys who ran Canon Films, and they're...
I don't know any of this.
Well, stuff. You know, if you have time and if it makes sense, you should watch that doc before we talk about this. Like, it's not research, but it will give you a sense of who made this movie. Okay. And it's very interesting and strange.
Yeah, I'm into that. Great. Fish was great.
Okay.
It was really fun. They're playing 13 nights at Madison Square Garden.
You loved it.
I really had a good time.
You loved it.
I really had a good time. It's great. You want to? Can I just give you one detail about?
Please.
That will just make you not interested, and we can close on this.
Great.
They're playing 13 nights at Madison Square Garden. They're selling out almost all of them.
How did you limit yourself to three?
Yeah, I know. Well, restraint.
Wow.
I showed some restraint. And I used to play in a band for years and years and years, and three-fifths of the band met up in New York to go to these shows. And it's as much about like reuniting with some friends as it was about the show, but that's the centerpiece, the backdrop to the reunion and the hanging out and stuff.
And these guys, I'm not being mean, they love Fish.
They love Fish. Okay. Yeah. They are musicians. I'm a drummer. I'm not really a musician. Let's just call a spade a spade. They appreciate it musically in ways I probably never could. And are really interested by what's happening on stage, sort of below the surface, and looking at the way that the interactions are happening and the, you know, that whole musical sort of communication happens. And I get a little bit of that. They really get it. And it's very interesting to them. And it's great. Here's the thing you won't like that I think is funny is, so they're doing 13 nights and they called it the Baker's Dozen. So a Fish names their sets. This is not even the part you'll dislike. They call it the Baker's Dozen, and every Fish set of shows has a name, like the Great Went or whatever. And
what?
Yeah, just they all have names. All the sets of shows they'll do. They'll do a run, and they'll call it this thing. Every night, they contracted this donut shop to give free donuts to everyone that came in. And every day, and they ran out instantly, obviously, because Fish fans very love donuts. And the first night, there are strawberry donuts. They're like, we gave away strawberry donuts today. And so they open the show with Strawberry Fields Forever, right? And they close it with a song called Strawberry Number 22 or something like that. And so, like, oh, we get
Strawberry Letter 22.
Yes.
I know it.
So they're doing that.
Originally by Shuggie Otis.
There you go.
Later performed by the Brothers Johnson.
Perfect. So you would have loved this show.
Can I tell you one? Then I'm going to tell you a Fish story.
Okay. Okay, good. So every night of the run, they have a different donut. And they play songs themed around the donut. And tonight's donut, which all my friends are pissed that we're not there, it's jam-filled donuts. It's jam-filled donuts. And so they're just playing their old hits and jamming them out for like an hour per song. And Fish, theoretically, is going to play 13 nights, about 40-plus hours of music with no repeated songs, which is pretty amazing just on a surface level to talk about a band doing.
I'll be very honest. Yeah. I know it's like... hip to hate Fish or whatever. I have one reason that I don't like Fish. One and only one. I've never really heard them. I have no real interest in jam band music, just fundamentally, but that's not why I hate Fish. Mm-hmm. The reason I hate Fish is because I knew a guy one time in the first few years I lived in LA, who I went to go see a movie with him, and in his car he was playing a tape of Fish. Mm-hmm. And the tape was them covering the entirety of
White Album.
No,
oh.
Of Remain in Light by Talking
mm-hmm,
Heads.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy listened to that over and over again. He loved that tape, cassette or CD or whatever, of Fish covering Remain in Light. He had never in his life heard Remain in Light.
Wow. I get why that's frustrating. I also
and I was like, this tells me everything about this band, that they would even have a fan like this.
That
and so go
is
fuck
crazy.
Yourself. Let's go watch this goddamn movie.
Ozo, you've been off the street too long, blood. Gotten lazy. You lost your edge.
You're the loser, punk.
try me.
Combat! Attention! You have just entered a battle zone.
It's time for us to find out who's really the best with the freshest crew. No time for words, we're through with that. All there is left is pure combat.
Did you like that movie?
I really had a great time.
That's not what I asked.
No, that's what I answered.
Did you that movie?
A great time. I did like that movie. I liked that movie. Uh-huh. I like that movie.
Uh-huh.
I'll just say it. I think Freakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo is a fun romp.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Did you love it?
Well, we'll see you next time. Does your favorite no, love it? No. But I asked you that because I conflicted is the wrong word, because I just can honestly say it was a great, great little time. I liked it a lot.
Did you watch it alone?
Fun to watch, certainly. Did you?
I watched it with my girlfriend, and it made it better.
Did you watch it in that really horrible quality?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, ours was okay. We looked through like a bunch of different. Yeah. So full disclosure, guys, you can't really get Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
You can, but it's not easy. You have to like go through some strange. Channels to get it. I mean, like you can buy an old, like they put it out on DVD or whatever. You can go get it at a used store or something.
Yeah, we didn't have access to those. We sat through 8 minutes of a really bad version, and then I was like, I can't do this.
Right.
And went and found a better version, which did still stop and start and buffer, and
right.
It was really frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mine too. But I essentially sat through the shitty one.
Yeah. Okay.
But it didn't matter. And in some ways, it sort of. I mean, I won't leap into the intellectual excuses for this movie,
right?
But it was, I don't know, it like further abstracted it. It like made it even more like sort of from another strange world.
That's great. No, that's great.
And
like the graininess of the VHS.
I couldn't even tell who anybody. Like I couldn't differentiate other than to kind of. It was like I was kind of blind.
Oh, ours was much like, sharper.
Than I don't know. I think that's that guy, and I'm pretty sure that's that girl, and
They
kind of look like the same. And that scene where they're switching out girls and a dummy, I was mystified about who was who.
Oh no, that scene makes no sense. That's their big like auteur moment.
No, I loved it. I got it. I mean, I loved it. But. I was, you know, I'll tell you honestly, man, it was like I was really rattling around in my head that I think that a case could be made. You know, we've seen low budget movies before. We've seen movies that are one could call lazy. We've seen movies that where creativity is the only stock in trade that they have at hand. And some of those movies we came out on the side of these are great. These are good. These have something in them. And others we thought these are garbage or insidious or cynical or something.
Yeah.
And I found that I could work to put myself in a cynical place and be like thinking about why this movie even exists and all sorts of sort of sociological ramifications for that. But mostly I was like, yeah, but like movies like this have existed forever. And it's just a very odd clash of elements to try to do this genre with this kind of resource, I guess.
Yeah.
But none of that is to say it's like a good movie. So I feel weird about thinking about like our Boondock Saints conversations about what actually sucks. This feels like the super flip side of Boondock Saints, which is it's laziness and potential cynicism or cash grabbiness on the sort of producer side. Creates something joyful and good.
Mm-hmm.
So, where does that leave us?
Yeah. You know well, let's talk about that. I'm super interested.
Do you know
that.
What I mean by the flip side? Though?
Absolutely get it. I think what Kalen's referring to. So, if I'm not mistaken, Flashdance or one of those movies comes out, and they're like, "Oh, this is cool. Let's make a movie about this kind of thing." And they put up Breakin', right?
Sorta. There's a different origin story to this that I think is more interesting
for Breakin'.
Yeah. I mean, it's that they made this movie called. I forget, like Breakin' and Entering or Breakin' and Entering or something, which was a documentary about the breakdancing scene. And like it was like some German financed film or something, but it sort of seemed to reveal to these, you know, producer guys, these kind of con artist producer guys, that there was something to be made. So they just took everybody from that documentary and was like, hey, be in this movie called Breakin'.
Right.
And it was a huge hit.
But wasn't it the year after Flashdance or something like that?
Or whatever, I
guess. So anyway, that's cool. But dance movies are having a moment, this type of thing. And they make this movie. And then 9 months later, Breakin' 2 comes out.
Yeah.
And this part I did look up online, that they had a movie, there was a big box office bomb that they had, they needed to fill the slot for, and they just ramped up the post-production of Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
The post-production.
Yeah, post-production. It went from like one guy cutting it to, I think, a staff of 8 working 24 hours around the clock. Just like, get it in the theaters. And it went from, I think, the article said 600 theaters to 2,600 theaters. Something crazy.
No way.
Yeah, this is what the article said. It was some version of this. Which I had the same eye blinking confusion about that. Imagine this in theaters feels odd to me. But
yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so there's a cynicism of the producerial side of this, right, that is inevitably true. And there's also, I would argue, probably in the writing of this, there's probably some sort of cynicism. I think as I read,
what writing? It's just like,
yeah. The plot is, I'll do the plot in a sentence or two. There's a community center that some developers want to tear down and make into a shopping mall, and the kids at the community center have to breakdance their way to money to save it. So there you go.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, that's all that happens. And there's there's little side stories which are exactly as cliched as that.
Yeah, but I do in terms of your initial question, I do think that there's something worth talking about here when the message is based around joy, ostensibly, or happiness, or just levity, and it's all a structure or a container for these kids to have dance numbers and do dancey things and then sort of walk around as if they have real human emotions. That is different to me than the attempted vomiting of one guy's dark male psyche onto the screen. And I don't know if that's fair, but
well,
I do think there's a distinction.
The reason the movie works is because the laziness of the filmmaking and producing, maybe not the filmmaking, but at least the production, the impetus behind making this movie, allows for these great, talented, sort of, I reckon to say, naive people to go do their fucking fun thing and have a fun time doing it. Like, I don't get the sense that anybody had anything but a good time.
Yeah, it
making
feels
the film
very fun.
Yeah, and that translates. And you know, the other thing I gotta say, like, I know this is sort of a deviation, but like, I feel movies like this make me feel very protective of them, where I'm like, this is so fucking embarrassing, you guys, but it only to a certain, from a certain point of view, which is like the point of view that expects a good movie, right, or like a, you know, something worth your money or something. Like there's a feeling where none of these people are at fault, and somehow there's a good feeling and a good intention coming out of it. But it's like, but there's something that's, I look at this and I think that most people aren't going to get that out of this. They're going to go straight to something
mocking
or derisive.
The earnestness of the performances is, I think, the main reason I like it. Like, they are so earnest,
but
and
it's
they're
not
really doing it.
But it's not. But let's be specific. These are not. They're not trying to give good performances. They don't know to do that. Mm-hmm. They have no reason to know to do that. I'm not like, these aren't actors. These mm-hmm. literally are kids off the street, and it certainly feels that way.
Yeah.
And they are, like, I feel weird because, like, they don't know that this is silly. Maybe they do, but they don't know that that's, like, going to be offering their heads on a chopping block for, you know, fucking snarky assholes
generations
to be like, this is the best bad movie ever, like, and laughing at the 80s shit. And it's like, I see how someone could see that, and I think that they are, unfortunately, a sad, sick person themselves in a certain way.
But
for me, it captures an honest... it's an honest record of a brief and fleeting moment in this particular culture, you know, and life and these kids' lives. And it's recorded here, and I feel really fond toward it. And somehow I feel protective of that goodness.
All that is true. And yet the same movie will have a very earnest scenario where So the idea is that there's these two kids off the street who are African-American, and their white rich girl who joins the troop, I assume in Breakin', the original.
Right.
They go to her house for dinner, and the parents are it's the scene you think it would be, and they end up leaving or whatever. And it's a very earnest performance by the lead character named Ozone, who's like, yeah, I don't need your money, and you know, screw you. And then
then they dance away
from
the
table.
And then
they dance away from the table, which is like, okay. I'm like, okay, there's a certain level of self-awareness, I assume, somewhere in there. That then goes to a scene where one of the characters, in the hopes of stopping this construction from happening, steals, I guess, a lunchbox or something, some bag from the construction workers, and then goes on a wild chase and falls down a pretty gnarly set of stairs. And, and the camera zooms in, and it's like, oh, this guy's really hurt. This is a serious moment. Which then leads to a hospital dance sequence with four sexy nurses.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Yes, but, you know, we talk a lot. Sometimes when we talk about a movie, and I don't know if I don't think this is where you were going to go. I think you're just talking about sort of some tonal slapdash inconsistency.
Not necessarily that, but I mean the earnestness of the characters, the actors performing is what I'm
suggesting. I don't buy it. I think that they were like, oh, cool, I get to do this scene where I get hurt and, like, act hurt. Mm. Cool. Like, that's how I think it is. Oh, cool, I get to do the scene where I tell off the white rich dad. Cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Like, that's all I saw.
And they never thought, like, with the dancing nurses and all that stuff, they're like, this is just fun. This is a fucking great dance sequence.
That's the thing. They might have thought this is silly.
Okay, that's what I'm driving at. I'm wondering what they thought. And if it goes to the depth of, this is kind of silly, but it's still a cool project, or if it's, how much awareness do they have?
I didn't ever sense that they were, again, I didn't sense they were having anything but a bad time, because they didn't.
Good time.
There's no reason, I mean, but a good time, because there's no reason. I watched the movie thinking, like, they don't really know. This sounds like I'm being, like, really condescending or something, but I felt like there's no reason for them to know this is a bad movie or care. Like, it's just a cool, they're fucking having a 3 weeks of hangout and get to dance around. And they get to do funny stuff, and it's a movie, you know? Yeah. Like, and then the other thing about all of that is I don't think the movie even fails on those levels, because it tells you very clearly, albeit in its awkward way, this is not reality. This doesn't exist on any plane of reality.
The opening scene tells you.
We're going to have dance fights.
Yeah.
They're going to have a fight under a scrubby, gritty, realistic-looking underpass, but they're going to fucking dance at each other. And that's the other thing about movies that I love, about movies like this that I love, that, you know, somehow it's constantly telling you about the experience of making the movie. It's too cheap not to tell you how it was made. Mm-hmm. It's just there on the screen. It's like, they went to a fucking underpass. They shot under there for a while. And then the thought that they would have is, yeah, but we're not going to fight. We're going to dance. Traditionally musical time.
Yeah. And listen, this comes out of the 50s and 60s. This is not a new idea.
It's fucking Beach
right?
Party.
Yeah,
or
exactly right. It's exactly I mean, it's probably even the plot of one of those movies.
I'm sure.
So, but I think let's backtrack that sequence a little bit, because it's very indicative of the entire film, I think, which is they're at this community center. They have a rival gang that's been established. Something is a spray can or something is thrown through the window of their community center, which is a scene we're all sort of vaguely familiar with, especially in 1984. Whenever this movie was made.
Yeah.
Pretty bold thing. They run outside to go catch the guys who did it. And it's two members of the rival gang. They chase them down to an underpass. It is a heated standoff where it looks like in any other film it would come to blows. In this movie, it comes to a dance-off.
But the dancing is them fighting.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It becomes a dance fight.
They don't go like, let's not fight, let's dance.
No. It's understood. It's understood. Exactly. This is the way we fight.
Yeah.
There's no real sense of knowing who wins or whatever. It's just, you just do it.
The other guys run away and he yells TKO or tactical knockout or something.
Yeah, he yells TKO, but wasn't that also written on one of their gang things? I thought that was TKO,
see that.
In any case, I guess it's clear
they won. They obviously won because the other guys run away, man.
But why would you ever run away in a dance fight?
Because they lost.
No, but you keep dancing.
They got beat.
Yeah, but
they got beat.
How was that?
They knew it. Everybody knew it.
I didn't know it.
I
had high def.
I knew it.
I had high def.
Well,
I couldn't
maybe that
tell.
Was the problem. But
really
all
good
of
dancers.
That, like, it's I found it charming and cute and sweet. And that's the other thing I felt protective about is, like, this movie's trying to be super innocent. And all of that innocence, actually, it has its social heart in the right place, too, which is, and I know it's a stupid movie about, like, you know, saving the community center. But there are times where the movie isn't becoming any more real than any other moment in the movie. But I was like, man, this movie just, it gets everything right about how it should be representing the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me almost like, there were times in the film, and frankly, that dance scene was one of them too, where I almost was like emotionally welling up because it was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not exactly the filmmaking, but like, you know, the story is about some white development people who want to tear down the black community center where they, in this case, happen to be teaching breakdancing. And
juggling. That's the two skills.
Breakdancing and juggling.
That's the two skills they're teaching.
And there are mimes there.
There's sometimes. One mime. Don't. It's not plural. There is a mime there. I thought there were two. No, it's the same guy who shows up in different outfits the whole movie.
Okay, what's he doing there? So anyway, so...
By the way, the one white guy, except for the main girl, is a mime.
So there are funny... Yeah, so there are funny... moments where like they will have to go to the city offices and like plead for their community center or whatever. And that if there's one thing that I thought was bordering on truly interesting in the film is that the people who play the community servants are capitulating in a way where they sort of espouse liberal affiliation or alliance. Like they'll be like, you know, we really wish we could help you, but you know, we just can't, you don't have the money. Like, you know, we're on your side here. And they actually play those very earnestly,
yeah.
Which I thought was a cool way to get at villainy,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the very overt real estate developer guys who are just straight up, you know, mustache twirling psychopaths who want to kill kids villains. With bulldozers.
Yeah.
And so there were things about the film that I was like, ah, that's like, I kind of like this. And it made me feel sad in that it presented an ideal of a real-ish scenario that does not go well, you know,
yeah.
The where it's like when you suddenly take that very familiar cliched narrative about save the
whatever
dance hall,
mm-hmm.
and put it into a place where it's truly a oppressed community, it becomes a little bit more powerful. And it's a strange translation.
There's also a weird, not weird, but along that same idea, there's this Deus Ex Machina sort of ending, unsurprisingly, where... what really gets the city council guy to shift ground is the news cameras show up.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's really an interesting idea, is that he's happy to do this under the cloak of night, but the second a news camera shows up and puts a camera on the community center, he's like, we can't sustain this. We're going to shift our, we're going to change our
vote. Well, because it implies that he knows he's evil.
Exactly. But the idea that like this news sort of matters, it's such a, right. It's obviously the easy way out of this. So I don't want to put too much import on this decision. But
No. None of these are good or high quality decisions, yeah. because they're so stock, yeah. and they're so sloppy and lazy. But there is something about putting it in that particular situation that's a little bit more...
Yeah, and some of the decisions, here's one for example, that
emotional.
Some of these decisions are, I think, the result of not thinking it through at all,
yeah.
But end up getting to an interesting place. For example, when the white girl brings her friends over, ostensibly to ask her dad for money, who has, the movie tells us, unlimited money, basically. And all you do is ask my dad for some money, he'll give me the money, and then you guys will have your community center, it's fine. So they're like, oh, we don't want to do that, but okay, we'll show up. And they go to this nice house, I guess, in Beverly Hills. It's set in L.A., by the way.
Yeah.
She's wearing a relatively normal outfit, and they're wearing the craziest breakdancing outfits you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And clearly they're set up for failure. And I this is the one time in the movie I said to the screen, I was like, why has she set her friends up like this?
Yeah.
But of course she didn't. Of course, that's just that that's the joke of the scene, is they show up in these outfits.
Right.
Of course they do, right? And her ex-boyfriend shows up in a suit, and her dad's wearing a suit, and they're wearing like worse than you think breakdancing outfits.
Yeah.
And so, but that's an interesting thing that the movie gets to, I think, through a sloppy set of ideas, but sure.
I actually thought the same thing about the next scene. You're exactly right about all that. And then the next scene is the classic stock scene where they serve some food, they serve dinner, and the black characters, the kids, eat. I mean, they're not kids. They're like, I don't know, late 20s or something.
Are they supposed to be that old?
I thought that maybe the one guy...
I thought they're supposed to be like 22.
Really?
Tops.
Well, maybe. Yeah, yeah. Still not children. They're not kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so they try the soup, and boy, do they hate it. They think it is so gross.
Yeah.
But all the white people
love it.
So I was looking at it thinking like, what is the joke? Like,
yeah.
Is the joke that it is terrible?
I couldn't tell.
And
that
white
the
people have
thought.
Terrible taste? Or is it that they don't have refined palates? And what's the joke there? Like, it was all very... But it was like, nobody thought about that. They were just like, yeah, you fucking go to the rich place and the food's gross. What do you thought?
What do you do?
You spit it out.
You feed it to the cat.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
But the way they play it doesn't play into any of that. It's just that, like, the white people are like, I would like some more. And they were like, oh, no.
Gross. And I guess he pulls an octopus out. You probably couldn't see in your screening.
I saw it had legs. I don't know what it was.
It was an octopus. It's hard to tell in my version also. I really like what you're saying about just the unbridled sort of joy and creativity that flashes through this. And I do think I'm able, whether it's true or false, to separate the production cash grab from the joy that I see.
And I want to be clear. We've said this a lot, and I said it about Boondock Saints. I said it about Toxic Avenger. I don't find this movie particularly impressive with its creativity.
No, it's no Toxic Avenger.
No, and it's not. And like the most creative it gets, I guess, is putting the house on a gimbal and turning his room around so that he can dance on the floors and stuff.
And the ceiling.
And that's cool. It's a cool part. But it's like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to make up that thing. And it wasn't breaking any new ground. It was just like, oh, it'd be cool if they could dance on the ceiling. So like, let's do that.
Yeah.
It gets by, so it doesn't get by on creativity. It gets by on the joy of imagining what it would be like to me, what it would be like to be these people, these actors in this film. And the good time they're having and the like sweet fantasy of the narrative put into a place in time and a space and a location that has never gotten something like that. And I thought that was really kind of funnily beautiful in a weird way. And that made me, maybe that's a better way of explaining it, is I thought it was kind of beautiful, and it made me sad that it would be reduced to, oh my God, one of the worst movies ever. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I think if you come away from this film, I can see a version of the world where you hate Watch This and Have a Nice Time. I can see a version where you watch it earnestly and have a nice time. People are just like, this movie's dumb. I don't really understand that version.
Well, I don't get that either, but the hate watch is actually the one that bothers me. Is like,
it bothers me too, but I get it. I can see a world where that exists. I looked it up on IMDb because I wanted to see how many of the movies Ice-T was in. Ice-T, by the way.
He hates this movie.
I can imagine. He does not come off well. The only person in all three, Breakin' 2 and then Breakin' 3, is Ice-T. He's the only person in all three films.
Yeah. Well, he's also in the documentary.
Jeez. Well, he's
on the movie. But this is where he came from. I mean, the reason he's in those movies is because he was in this scene. Community in the early 80s.
Yeah. But what surprised me when I went to IMDb to confirm this fact or to see what was up, 145 actors are listed on IMDb in this, which strikes me as idea. The idea is that people are proud to have been in this.
Yeah.
Because they for sure listed themselves, I would imagine, right?
I bet so.
And that's cool to me. That's cool that there was like this. And there are massive crowd scenes with massive extras.
Yeah.
And the movie is not understaffed. Like every scene has as many people as you'd want it to have, plus about 10 every time.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Well, and the way that those scenes are shot, again, in a sloppy, lazy way that happens to sort of work to its advantage, are these just sort of bad, bland, static shots of various people in the crowd. And it makes it feel like a party that you're at, kind of, in a funny way. Because
the colors are so bold.
Yeah, there's no art to how it's presented. So it basically feels like, look at this documentary we had about making this movie.
Yeah.
that's kind of how it feels all the time.
That's good.
And I loved that. I loved watching them have a good time. Like that's, you know, I don't know how else to put it.
I do miss movies. I don't want to say like this because I don't necessarily think this is indicative of a genre of film. But I do miss when film was still at its early stages in a way where people were like, how do we throw a little bit of money at something and make some crazy shit?
You're talking my language now because that is, I thought that all the time. Like the movie, like I think I've even said this on the show at some point, is like the early Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin and Fatty Arbuckle movies. Mm-hmm. I love them for this spirit. And that one is creativity, but for the spirit of like, we don't fucking know. Nobody knows how to make a movie.
Yeah.
So we'll just go out in the forest or in the fucking, you know, Griffith Park and like make it up. Like, let's just go do some funny stuff. And I love that because it is so transportive to, and the most direct for me pipeline into looking at people making up and having a good time with this new art form and with the art form of film. And I felt that all the time watching this, which is not about the people making the movie, but about the people who are in it who don't know. That's kind of what I mean. It's like, there's an innocence to like, they don't know how this will look on screen. They don't care that their performance might be hammy. Cause like, who cares? You're in a fucking movie.
Yeah.
And so they get to kind of do whatever they want and feel very free with that. And they aren't, it's not bad performances in the sense of like, again, like The Room, where people are trying to be good, but they're terrible. And there's sort of a like geek show element to it. I don't feel that here at all. They're just having a good time.
Yeah.
And
unself-aware in a beautiful
yeah,
way.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Unself-aware, totally,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's this one scene where, so this kid who falls on the stairs breaks his leg and his arm, and this it covers up some pretty substantial plot holes that aren't relevant. But he is getting pushed out. He's fallen in love with a girl who is overdubbed in bad Spanish, because that's a joke also. And then they're escaping because she hides him in a laundry basket.
Oh, I love
pushing
this
him out, right? And the nurse comes and almost catches him, and then he pops out of the laundry heap and it zooms in.
The elevator is shutting.
Yeah.
Just in time for him to pop his head out of. I mean, not just in time because the elevator takes forever to shut. But right before the elevator shuts, he pops his head out. And what does he say? He goes like I'm a Wascally Wabbit, or like that's
some,
all folks.
Some Looney Tunes line. Yeah. I was hoping you'd remember it. But some Looney Tunes line, and he just sells the shit out of it, and it's. You know, like they just came up with that thing and it was such a funny idea and they just did it. And this kid is so blissfully, beautifully unself-aware in the performance. It's just like him doing a funny gag.
Well, and that's why that scene, which I talked about earlier and I'd like to talk about more because it's so nice, is that there's a scene that is so horribly conceived and so horribly constructed on any level of like competent execution, which is he says, that same character says to his friend, like, I want you to teach me how to talk to a woman.
I got really excited when the scene started. I thought, I can't wait for what
and
it was about to happen.
And boy, did it deliver.
Yeah, like, it does it. It does everything you want it to do.
So he goes, like, I don't know how to talk to a girl. And this guy's like, oh, good news for you. I know how to talk to girls.
Everyone, by the way, in the movie wants a piece of Ozone, the leader of the gang. And this is Turbo speaking to him, his, like... sort of adjunct sidekick fella.
So Ozone is the guy who's going to teach him how to talk to girls. And he also, by the way, it's important to know for the purposes of this scene, is a teacher of breakdancing. And we've seen him teach breakdancing, which is, he goes like, do it like this. And then they do it exactly like that. And that's how he teaches breakdancing. Yeah, yeah. And then they high five.
In his defense, very effective.
He's an excellent teacher.
Yes, very good.
So he goes into this scene and he's like, first thing you want to do is walk like this. And then he does a ridiculous walk. And then then where the scene starts to really confuse you is the other guy doesn't do it. He's just like, I'm not going to do that. How do I do this? And then he like asks another thing. And then Ozone's like, okay, well, here's what you want to do. You want to go do this. And he's like, yeah, but what if I kiss her? So he never does anything that this guy is trying to tell him, all of which is ridiculous.
Which has to be frustrating for Ozone.
But
because
he's not
he's
frustrated.
Clearly, no.
He just gets to move on
but
to
I'm
the
saying,
next lesson.
Inside, if I was a teacher where if I did something and they just replicated it instantly and this kid just wouldn't do what I said,
he just won't do
I'd
it.
Be
yeah.
so annoyed. I'm like, I'm a great teacher and you're
all
really
you have
fucking
to do
this up
is
for
do
me.
Exactly
just
this.
Do this and then it'll
he doesn't
all
even
work
do
out
it. He doesn't even try to do it. He doesn't do it wrong. He just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so then this turns into with no explanation, although no dance scene in the movie has an explanation in a good way, him dancing. And he picks up this dummy off of a chair and he starts dancing with it and showing all his cool moves. And then the dummy amazingly turns into the girl he likes and they start dancing together. And then it will like quickly cut to the girl the other guy likes and then cut back to the dummy. All like rapidly.
Well, let me, may I dissect
Yeah, I'm not
this
doing
scene.
A good job.
No, let me just dissect this a little bit because it's actually, I think, the most auteur moment of the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a dummy involved here and they're using the dummy ostensibly. Like, here's how you'd seduce a girl on the dance floor. This is, you got to grab her and you got to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then Turbo is watching Ozone do this and Turbo has a very clear girl in mind. It's this Mexican lady he's seen dancing a bunch. By the way, do you remember the song Toy Soldiers?
In this movie?
No, no, the hit, the 80s hit. Anyway, that girl sings Toy Soldiers. Oh. That's a hard thing to say. She was also on Kids Incorporated. Anyway, wow. So he wants to seduce this girl, and then he's watching Ozone dance with a puppet, and from his POV, he imagines Ozone dancing with his girl, and he starts to get jealous.
Right.
And so he goes and takes the puppet back.
Right, right, right.
And now he's dancing with the girl
in
his dreams.
That is why it's awesome. Because you have these three subjective points of view going on, one of which is yours, the viewer, and the other two of which are each of the individual guys.
And it goes on so long. And so then...
Until...
And well, then Ozone is watching Turbo dance with a puppet, and he's now seeing Turbo dance with the girl he wants. But then the puppet then turns into Kelly, the girl Ozone wants, the yeah. little white girl aforementioned. From
and then
the,
he's stunned by that turn of events.
They're back.
Yeah. And then so, they start pulling at the dummy, which then becomes both girls in sort of jump cuts over and over until they rip the actual dummy.
Yeah. The ripping is great. Really weird, but awesome.
It's great. Yeah. It's great. And you know what else? This weekend, it just so happens, I watched big clips of Singing in the Rain.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched big clips of Magic Mike. Jeez.
Do you want to talk about where you watched Magic Mike?
Well, I was in a room with seven other dudes.
Cool.
Watching Magic Mike.
Go on.
By ourselves.
Yep.
No women.
No, it's important.
But they were both...
So you Twitterers who say Killen doesn't know how to party, fuck yourselves.
I know how to party.
He knows what to do.
I was thinking in my head as I watched Magic Mike, I was like, oh, there are parts of this that are like kind of like Singing in the Rain. And like the thing that I like about dance movies is like that feeling of just kind of unfettered enthusiasm or performance or talent, which is why we talked about liking the Step Up movies.
Yeah.
And then watching this, I was thinking about that too. And I was like, wow, you don't even need to make a good movie for this to be effective.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know why, in some ways, I don't know why people don't make more of these, except that I think the audience isn't actually there for it.
Roger Ebert gave this film 3 stars, first of all.
What a guy.
And said, I hope this unleashes a wave of low-budget dance movies because they're delightful. And wouldn't it be great if this was the first
of many of these? That's awesome that you said that, because I was thinking to myself, part of what makes me sad is that this isn't the thing that took off.
I completely agree. I'm going to say something a little contentious. I love dance movies. We talked about this in the intro. I love Step Up. I haven't seen Magic Mike, full disclosure, but like, you know, of the 3 movies I owned on VHS, Flashdance and Footloose were 2 of those 3. So
and
like,
Fame.
Yeah. So I love them. I didn't love the dancing in Electric Boogaloo, but it did not put a damper on my enjoyment of the film.
No.
I wasn't like, this dancing's awesome. No. It was so joyful, it didn't matter to me.
Yeah, well, and yeah, exactly. And it's like, you can see that they're good at breakdancing, but oddly, this movie doesn't have a lot of time for breakdancing.
It doesn't
like,
have much at all.
It just has them jumping around.
Yeah, like, that's they don't kind of... do a lot of dancing. Like, in the dancing they do is not especially great. There's a couple moments where one of the silly plot twists is that Kelly gets this opportunity to go be the lead in this show that opens in Paris, and she has to decide between going and pursuing her career and helping save the community center, which she doesn't in any meaningful way help save, but she stays behind to do that. And you get to see her audition scene for this thing, and I was like, oh, she's actually a good dancer. This is cool.
Oh,
but I didn't know until an hour into the film that she was a good dancer.
Yeah, yeah,
the
right,
movie doesn't
right.
bother to show us this. And maybe that's exposited in Breakin', which I hadn't seen. So.
Well, right. And this movie, I would suspect that this is a director they just chucked at it. I mean, this guy made fucking Ninja, American Ninja, or like
yeah,
Ninja
3, yeah.
which everyone thinks is so funny and I've never seen.
Yeah. And Joe Furstenberg, right?
I guess. I mean, he's just a super hack. I mean, he just is. Like, he's a B-movie. And I don't even necessarily mean that in a derogatory way. He got a gig overseeing bad B-movies. Fine.
Fun.
You know, very fun. And this movie seems like he probably had a pretty goddamn good time, but he didn't exactly have a vision.
Yeah.
And so he didn't give a shit that he didn't know if they were dancing well. He probably wasn't even watching.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, just fucking turn on the camera and like, you know, I love these kids.
<It's>, you know? They're fun. Yeah. They're fun. They'll do a thing. Yeah. Well, apparently the two people who wrote it were just two white guys. He was like, you guys know how to write movies, right? And they'd written a couple things like poetry or something. Like, yeah, we'll figure it out. And they went and they actually, the two people that wrote this wrote the script for Breakin', and he would like, canned him. He's like, get out of here with this bullshit. And then he called him back. He's like, want to do Breakin' 2? And they're like, sure.
What it's about time for that bullshit.
Yeah, well, yeah, we want that back in. But they said a deep knowledge of the community at that point, so they could accurately represent it, which was
well,
which
that's
great.
Laughable, but, yeah, but fine.
I also love the way, and I do legitimately miss this idea that they don't really give a shit about plot. Like, there's some things that happen where you're like, how did this happen? And you instantly, and I sort of get caught on these things.
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen? Like, what's the minutia of how we got here? Didn't care at all. Which for me is a huge deal.
You know what I thought to myself? I actually thought about you thinking about that.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't wonder that. I was like, I know exactly how all these, I mean, in the way that like, your first thought is the right thought is like, yeah, well, just somebody just had it, like, just didn't bother to have any other idea. Like,
yeah.
There's no There's no like, oh, how crazy, like what committee came up with this crazy thing. No, it's
someone I'll had give you a idea. Perfect example of this. The transparency of it was what made me not care.
Yeah,
absolutely right. But so this kid who gets in the hospital, and he's in traction. He's got a fucking massive leg cast. He's got an arm cast. They have a dance sequence where he gets out of the hospital, still limping around, still needing the help of this Mexican savior princess to get out of it. The next day, they go to protest the destruction of the community center, which, by the way, is supposed to be done with four bulldozers. I don't know how you knock a building down with four bulldozers, but that's what the budget allowed for. That's what shows up.
Yeah.
And everyone's getting out in the way, and this one kid in the cast goes and stands in front of the bulldozer, and then the developer's like, run him over! And the guy's like, you're weird, we're leaving. And then he leaves, and that's how the kids like basically
yeah.
win.
Yeah. I loved that, by the
awesome.
Way. This guy's like, wait, I'm not here to kill a child.
Yeah, yeah, and he's like,
and
do
he's
it! Like,
and he's like, I'm leaving. And yeah. he backs all his
by the way,
bulldozers
that guy
out.
Clearly had never been in front of a camera, even like a daguerreotype in his life. He was just like, just saying a thing they told him to say.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
a guy that got, like, hey, you come, you look like a construction worker. Yeah. Come sit in this thing and say this thing. So, or he probably owned the fucking bulldozer.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, right. all that is to say, what the next scene, this kid is fully healed and dancing.
Yeah.
And you, of course, you know how that happened. He has to dance in the final scene. It's Turbo.
Yeah.
So because you don't wonder why they got there, it doesn't bug you.
No.
But you sort of clock these things throughout the movie. And the movie, listeners, filled with these things
yes.
that are just like arbitrary decisions that you don't really marvel at because they make a certain amount of intuitive sense.
They make enough sense to where I kept thinking, like, if anybody bothered to ask anybody, they would go like, yeah, that's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. Like, there's no idea. Nobody said no to any idea in this movie. It's
yeah.
just like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? Why not? Can I say something else to are we close to the end here?
Yeah, we're doing good.
No, we're okay. I want to say one more thing about feeling such affection for this movie. And
I'm happy you liked this, by the way.
Yeah, I like it. I like it very much, although I still when we get to the end, I'm not sure exactly what to say about people going to watch it.
I have something to say.
But here's what I want to say about it right now is that it's also not just that it's an artifact, although I think that helps mm-hmm. in terms of it becomes more appealing in now, especially, and sort of a little bit sadder now that you know that like this particular wave didn't exactly carry on, although it morphed into other things. And I think about, you know, these people in this time and what a wonderful experience it is, and I just feel bad that anybody would like laugh at it, but there are current movies that do this too, and they don't have to be low budget. And I like, oddly, the movies that I started to think about watching this movie that evoke this same feeling from me are like Valerian
mm-hmm.
and The Lone Ranger is a movie I feel this way about and Jupiter Ascending, and like movies that seem, I guess it's this, movies that seem deeply uncool
yeah
and are nevertheless awesome or interesting or ambitious or in some ways communicating some spirit. Magic Mike XXL I feel this way about, even though some people love that, others are like this, that stupid piece of garbage. Like, and I just feel,
I go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I feel what you're saying, but there's a difference. I've been thinking a lot about Valerian. Just because the idea that Luc Besson was obsessed with this from a young age and sort of was a passion project for him. And he wanted to like get it right. And the visuals were very important to him. Same thing, I think, with Jupiter Ascending. I haven't seen Lone Ranger, so I can't speak to it.
But here's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that those are more passioned director takes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same feeling of seeing a human being there who is enjoying something or trying to communicate a joy of something or a sincere love of some kind and getting laughed out of the building on some level. And I saw that in the actors. And so I kept watching. I didn't give a shit about whoever this director was, except that he allowed this to happen, which is cool, I guess. But I kept thinking, like, man, like I hate when people reject sincerity.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, and I think ties into that, is that in those movies you reference, with the exception possibly of Lone Ranger, I feel the director and writer, which in these cases are the same people, the I feel them on the screen and I feel that passion and I'm swayed by it and I enjoy it. And this one, I don't think there's any above the line passion or enjoyment. It's coming from the actors,
exactly.
Which is different, I think. And that's really cool.
I guess it's different. I mean, yes, it makes it a different film, but for me, it evoked the same spirit. And so I just wanted to sort of say, like, well, there are other films. It's not about being locked in 30 years ago that makes me feel that way. There are plenty of contemporary films that will do the same thing.
I do have a, like, just to, this needs to be mentioned, the outfits, costumes, the hairstyles, they're all awesome. They're all great. And I do have nostalgia for that because, you know, all those old, you know, if you ever had those VHS tapes about how to break dance and stuff, I don't know if you guys had these, but there are these people, like, there are these hairstyles, and with the possible exception of some of the earrings and things, the outfits are right and the hairstyles are right. And there's a nostalgia for that time period when this was like a thing that you did and things that you like you saw around. I never saw them in New Orleans or Baton Rouge, certainly, let's be clear, but I did see them on VHS tapes I had, and I thought it was so neat. I thought that was cool, and I didn't have a sense that it wasn't uncool. Like, it was neat at the time, I think.
This movie was uncool at the time.
Well, no, to a 7-year-old or whatever. Like, yeah, when I saw it. Kid. Yeah.
You know what's funny about that? I saw it when I was looking up and trying to watch it. It's airing on a channel called Starz Kids.
Oh, wow.
Like, currently. It has time. It's on this. That's, you could, like, some kid with Starz watches Starz Kids. They watch Breakin' 2.
You know what's funny about that is that there, again, this is all from one article that I read, but it said that there was like an argument between the producers and the writers about verisimilitude, about these kids wouldn't say baloney. They'd say like fuck or whatever. And he's like, no, we don't do that here.
Well, and that's the big difference, as I understand it, between Breakin' and Breakin' 2. You know, I mentioned that documentary about Canon Films. Yeah, yeah. And basically, they do interview some of the actors. And I think the actors say something to the effect of like, well, Breakin' 2, yeah, it was like a cartoon. Like, they went and made a cartoon out of something that we were actually kind of proud of in Breakin', of representing some reality of a community. And this movie abandons that completely Beach Blanket Bingo. I mean, it just becomes a total cavalcade of movie logic and colors and, you know,
massive enthusiasm. Dance sequences.
Yeah. But it has zero relationship to depicting the reality. However, to me, who doesn't know anything about this community, obviously, really the community in the era, somehow it makes me hope that this projects some unconscious feeling of what it was like to dance and party together.
I wonder how they feel about this. I don't think any of the three leads are still working. They're still alive. They're still around. But, you know, I sort of loosely IMDb'd into them, and nothing's going on, obviously.
Right.
I hope that they're proud of it. I hope they feel pleasure looking back on it as a cultural phenomenon.
I think, and this is me projecting, I know, but the only thing that would, and I maybe am picking this up from the documentary, is like, man, you guys shouldn't feel ashamed of this, or you shouldn't feel bad about it. Like, you shouldn't let anybody make fun of this to the point where you think it's embarrassing. I mean, it kind of is, but like, you were young. Like, that's what it is.
It's cool. I think it they should be proud of being in it. And I'll segue to saying that I wouldn't watch this on the internet. It's not necessarily a pleasurable watching experience, as we both can attest to. But I do think if you ever stumble across a copy of this or have the ability to watch it on DVD, I would say do it. I think it's fun. I think it's fun. It's entertaining.
Watch it
with some friends and try not to be judgmental or dismissive of it. Try to like get into the fun of it and the spirit of it and just watch it and have a good time.
And I do think that it, in the sense of nostalgia, even though this isn't my nostalgia, it is transportive to at least a mentality of a certain era, which is both these real people and the feeling of exploiting that and what that turns into and the strange stew that those very uncomplicated influences create, which is like this particular happy experience.
Also taps in, we've touched this tangentially in other episodes, but this touches into the carefree antics of the 80s, and we've talked about this before, that you can judge a decade or a time period by the music it releases. And, you know, Walking on Sunshine is around this era. You know, this is Wham, and this is fun, unbridled by politics music, because the U.S. is not in a war here. The U.S. is out of Vietnam, the U.S. is out of Korea. And the 80s reflects that sometimes. And this to me is a look, sort of a glimpse of, this isn't Deer Hunter. This is
no
pure unbridled, you know.
And I'm sure, yes. But I am sure there are people who would accurately look at this film as basically and I don't mean this racially, but a whitewashing of a community that deserves more respect than this.
No doubt. So, I mean, no doubt.
So, but that's all.
Yeah, I mean, we can take that angle on it too, I think. But the idea that you can see sort of the fun of the 80s, and I don't know if other decades have that version of fun.
Well, and the counter to what I just said is that, you know, this dance community deserves its own fucking happy musical as much as any other genre, another another style of dance or musical. I mean, like,
doesn't have to be gritty.
And there's something really beautiful and awesome about using, you know, the logic of Rodgers and Hammerstein, even though this isn't anywhere nearly as accomplished, but as surreal or as unreal as Singing in the Rain or any, you know, Gene Kelly film, and just being like, yeah, but like, just, let's just put that down. Let's just put that over here.
It's great.
Like, that's with the real people who actually are from there. Like, that's, it just is awesome. Yeah. It's just a cool thing to do.
Check it out. Check it out. It's cool, guys.
Yeah, why not?
I say watch it. Before we draw, any, it's your turn. Any business? Are we caught up on business?
I can't think of any business.
I can't either.
I'll tell you. Well, maybe this. Okay. In the coming, either this week or next week, we will release another episode of Does Your Favorite Song Suck?
Oh, yeah.
We've recorded a couple, and we're going to very...
wean itself away from us, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going to wean it away from us, but we're going to put it out, I think, every once in a while on without a regular schedule. Just as we kind of collect them and as we get it going, we're going to start putting them out during the week sometime.
Spencer, so. as fast as you make them.
Yeah.
I think is the thing.
Yeah, as fast as he makes them and, you know, with no pressure to do so. And but also, they're good. These couple recorded are great.
It's got to be all Spencer-driven, you guys. So get ready for the pure, unbridled id of Spencer.
He's awesome at it.
Yeah.
All right. On our show.
Back to the real deal. Get next serious.
Week, the flagship.
This is going to be a serious. This is going to be a serious episode coming up.
We will seriously watch and dissect the film called Bottle Rocket.
Oh, so serious.
Not so serious, but so delightful.
Contentiously, one of my favorite Wes Anderson movies.
Well, let's not fight about that next week.
Okay, bye. On Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?